you're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas, and welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballew.
I am Carl Mickelson. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good, Carl. It's we've had a bunch of rain this week, which is never good for golf, but I don't know that it's rained enough to keep people off the course. It feels like it's just kind of spit at us. And if you're a dedicated golfer, you probably get away with playing this week. Did you get out and play at all?
No, you know, it was Zoom meetings that kept me off the golf course this week. Unfortunately, you know, it's you know, January is always leading up to and including it's right. This week would be the prelude to the PGA Show. I think in some years I might already have been traveling toward Orlando at this point. But everything's been replaced by Zoom calls. So the PGA Merchandise Show next week will be virtual. I think instead of starting on Wednesday or Thursday, they're going to kick it off on Tuesday the 26th. So everything that's gone on this past week has been sort of a lead up or kind of that anxiety the entire golf industry has. You know, that usually means, you know, we're traveling and getting together, but now we're kind of doing the next best thing, I guess, and doing a lot of virtual meetings and show and tell. And in our second segment today, you're going to see a little bit of that today with our friend here in Austin, Jordan Tabarro, the Titleist rep. We'll talk about new wear. So it's typically the time when a lot of new stuff comes out, and that's still the case. We're just not going to get to touch it and feel it and talk face to face with the people who created it like we do every January. So a little bit different, and yeah, different week for me because it's the first week in several weeks where I didn't play at least once a week. So how about yourself?
Yeah, I actually am up in Dallas, and I played Glen Eagles Friday. Yesterday, we got a good buddy of mine that we played each other's member guest, and we're one of my best friends in the world, and we actually did not play golf in 2020 together. We didn't see each other in 2020, and we usually see each other 5 to 10 times a year, but when everything shut down, and what makes this even funnier, Carl, as you know, and we've talked about on the show before, when the pandemic started, I didn't pick up a golf club for 10 weeks. I stayed in the house. My wife was pregnant, and we were worried about everything. And finally, she went and got her hair cut. And when she did that, she said, "I guess it's okay for you to go play golf because I'm going to get my hair cut." And I said, "All right." So that was about 10 weeks, and got to playing again. Well, my friend Tony literally played like every single day starting at the beginning of the pandemic because all he does is travel.
Right.
And his travel was completely shut down. So he could go out at 4 or 5. And play 9 holes or play 18 with a buddy real quick. And so he played, you know, 700 rounds. And we were both about the same handicap. We were both probably about a 6, 7, somewhere in there when all this started, index. I got down to a 5-1. I actually got down to a 4-9. I'm a 5-4 now, but it's kind of right in there. But that's the lowest I've ever been in my life. Tony got down to a 1-8.
Wow.
You know, and so it's a little unfair that he got a pandemic in which he could just go play golf every day. He's single, early 40s, just like me, but I have a wife and 2 kids. He is single, so he can just go play golf every day. And it's just kind of funny how much ribbing I give him over that, how much he gives me for not being able to play. But it's great. It's just great to see friends that you haven't seen in forever and get to play some golf, and hopefully the member guests will start kind of cranking back up, and we'll get to do some more things like that.
No doubt. Yeah. Any return to normalcy will be great. Well, you know, I'd like to talk about that. My handicap went from, you know, we started this show a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago. And I was a very shaky, fragile 12 at that time. I'm down to 9.4. Since that time, I would still call it shaky and fragile without question. I don't think it travels well at all. But what you mentioned about your friend Tony says a lot for that anecdotal notion that we have as golfers is, you know what, I may not have played my best today, but I bet if I played every day, I could really improve. I mean, it's really interesting. You know,
Carl, how often do we say on this show, if you can get off on your lunch break and go hit 30 minutes of balls or go chip and putt, just go do it because you'll be better for it if you love the game and you want to keep playing.
I think your friend Tony has proven that you can actually see some of those gains by just playing more. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's gotten with coaches. Maybe he's talking to David Ledbetter on text every hour. But but I think there's a lot to be said for just playing more golf and kind of finding it. Finding your way, finding your swing, getting comfortable, getting in that groove, and the rust factor can really be a real thing. But to go from, you know, 6 or 7 down to 1, I mean, that's the stuff of dreams. That's where you want to be. That's where the game is really, really fun. And not to sell short that you've knocked two strokes off your handicap since the pandemic, during the birth of a child. And I know you guys have had some long night, you know, certainly long days, but definitely some long nights there at the house. So, that's a lot to be said that you can actually just dig in, play more, and see some gains. Now, obviously, there's a lot of great teaching professionals, and we can obviously excel our games if we learn the right methods. But, man, I really – that's kind of that notion I've had my whole working life is, man, if I could just play 3 or 4 times a week, I'd like to know what I really am without all these throwing away shots or the car swing or not getting to hit balls or – all those excuses that we have built up, there might be some validity to all that belly aching and excuse making.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because he did hire a coach for a small amount of time. It wasn't like a, you know, ongoing long thing. I think he wanted some help with a couple things, and that really helped too. He would text me and say he shot 82 and was really disappointed, and I could laugh at him and be like, you know, you understand the scores we used to shoot, right? And what disappointment really was. And so he got down to where he was shooting 78 to 82 every time he played. And he called me on a Saturday and he said, what are you up to? And I was like, oh, you know, just hanging out with the kids. I'm like, what are you up to? He's like, well, I just got off the golf course. I was like, oh, did you have fun? He goes, yeah. Guess what I'd shot? I was like, I don't know, 69.
There you go.
Yeah, and I think his best score ever was 76 or 75 or somewhere in there. And so it really is amazing. Number one, I think golf is a game where when you go out, you're thinking about so many things. If you're not great or your mental stability is not great in your own game, you're thinking about so many things. Where do I take the club back? Am I keeping my head down? Am I keeping my turning my hips? Am I doing everything that you talk about all the time? But then once you do it all the time, all those kind of nerves and mental side of it, I think all that really goes away. Like anything, if you practice, you get it better. And I think that's just what happened. I just think he played so much that he got comfortable with his swing. He figured out he got a couple tips, worked on it, went to the range, you know, chipped and putted. And, you know, we've always joked about how bad of putters we are. You get into a flow of those type of things. And I think it really changes, you know, your game. It changes who you are as a golfer, and it changes the opportunity to become a much better player.
There's a lot to be said for the groove. Now, this is a mega size, king size version of the theory I have, and this will ring true to you probably because you go on those Bandon trips every April. Day 3 of any golf trip, I think, is the best litmus test of where your game is right now. You get in round 1, you're going to be nervous, you're going to have high anticipation, you're going to be stiff from the plane or the car or a combination of the two. And you're probably not going to play a true round. Second round, you've had some long, you've had at least one long night. You might be tired, you might be in the groove. But the third is the one where you really should play like yourself. And that should be, I feel like the third and fourth round of a golf trip are probably the best indicators of your peak performance. Now, there's nothing to that. I don't have any data to support that other than a lot of golf trips I've been on. But I think playing a lot could be the prescription. That's what I used to always say. You know, when you'd play good for 13 or 14 or 15 holes and have 3 or 4 throwaway holes, and I just look at a buddy and go, well, the only solution must be more golf. I think Tony's proven us right.
I 100% agree with that, and I'll tell you something funny you mentioned about the golf trip. I don't know what round in our Bandon trip you would ever consider to be that round for us, because let me just give you the outline of our trip real quick. we have now it's actually changed even more this year, but the plan is 18 Wednesday, 36 Thursday, 36 Friday, 36 Saturday, 36 Sunday. But what makes it even tougher, I mean, obviously that's, and you're walking, you can't, there are no carts abandoned.
Right.
So, I mean, Carl, that's, you know, that's, I don't even know if I can do that math quick enough, 162 holes in 5 days or 4.5 days.
It is. Looks like we lost Bob for a little bit. But yeah, that's true. Do we have you back, Bob?
Yeah, I'm still here if you got me.
You cut out for a second, but we're good. Yeah, so it's 162 holes of golf probably, or somewhere in there, somewhere more than 108 holes of golf. And where is the middle point, and when does fatigue really weigh in? Yeah.
Right, so that, let me ask you that question then, because my two best rounds at Bandon are a 76 at Old MacDonald and a 79 at Pacific, and both of those came on Sunday.
No, is Sunday the beginning?
So how does that make any sense?
Is Sunday the beginning or the end of the round, of the trip?
Sunday's the end of the trip. It's the last day of the trip.
I think there's
you're so worn out you don't care anymore what you actually do. You're just like, whatever, just try to hit it somewhere. Maybe that's what it is.
I've had that phenomenon on trips where the last round where you – I think there's something mental. I hesitate to call guys like you and me athletes, but I do think there's something in us that is athletic, and the middle game plays into it, where you really do focus. You really do want to end on a good note. You don't want to put your clubs back in the travel bag, having had a frustrating, you know, last series of holes, whether that's the back nine or off. You just had an up and down round. I think you want to play that last punctuating round of a golf trip. Your best. You want it to be a representation of how you're playing at that time, and whether you're tired or what other factors intervene, I think that comes into play quite a bit. I've seen that happen before, but
I'd agree.
It does. I agree with that. The overarching, I think, sentiment is it just feels good to be playing more, even though, you know, I didn't get much progress on my backyard projects that we've got going on, including the putting green is on hold right now because of weather. It just feels good to be kind of in a rhythm of playing more and knowing that you're probably going to be playing on a regular basis more than I have in a long time. It feels good.
Now, Carl, I'm gonna shift gears here on you with a good little transition. I'm going to tell you who's not going to be playing a lot of golf soon.
Yeah.
That's Tiger Woods. And I bring this up because there is a – I don't know if you follow Scratch Golf on either Twitter or on Instagram, but Scratch, SKRATCH, they have some great videos, and they do Tiger Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite ones was from this week, and he was playing with Kevin Na, and Kevin did his – he had like a four-footer and hit it and immediately started walking toward the hole and almost grabbed the ball before it went in the hole, as is becoming customary for Kevin to do now, which has become kind of a funny thing on tour. So Tiger sees it happen and just starts dying laughing. And he then hits his putt and acts like he's going to do the same thing, and everybody loses it. Everybody's dying laughing. Kevin Na's dying laughing. And it was one of those moments of, like, number one, would Tiger Woods have ever done this before? To see him in that mode is so good. But this week he put out a statement saying, and the reason those two came up, obviously, was Kevin Na won last week, and Tiger Woods announced that he had undergone another surgery on his back, which makes 5 surgeries on his back now. Never a good number. 1's never a good number. The Masters is in roughly less than 80 days now. Will we see Tiger at the Masters? All of those questions start to come up, and you got to wonder if we're going to see him there. We don't know. I don't think you ever really know how rough a surgery is, but when you've had your 5th one, you've got to assume he's going to be down for a little bit. And thinking of the tournaments he's going to miss between now and then, at Riviera, and I mean, there's so many good places that are on this West Coast swing, and then even Arnold Palmer. It's a frustration. I think everybody is frustrated for Tiger, considering his comeback, considering what he's done to get his body back in shape, to be able to win another major, to be able to compete the way he's competed. And it's just I think it just takes us all you just want to take a step back and go, man, you just, number one, you feel for him, but number two, you really feel for the game because he's better when he's in it.
Yeah, the game is better when Tiger's in it, and there's no question about it. And I think Tiger's, as you said, better when he's in it, happier when he's playing. Still has a lot to prove. I still think somewhere in his mind he thinks he can attain all those records that Jack Nicklaus said. He caught Sam Snead. It's still out there. As fans, I think we want as much Tiger as we can possibly get. So when you hear he's having a fifth back surgery, and we don't know if that's going to be a few weeks or several months or if it's a whole season scrapped, it's a big, giant question mark right now when we're going to see Tiger Woods again. And the only optimism is how far back surgeries have come. I remember in high school when a guy would come in on crutches and he had knee surgery from an injury the previous Friday, and the scar would go about up from mid-thigh all the way down his shin. Well, now knee surgeries are a lot smaller. You can use scopes and robots to go in and do the work that you needed to kind of cut open and be more invasive. So if you look back at those times and think the recovery is a lot faster. I mean, back surgery is probably one of the scariest two words in golf. I mean, there's a lot of scary words in golf, but back surgery is not high on the list of things you want to hear about whether Tiger's your favorite player or just somebody you want to see compete against today's players. I guess, there's optimism. It could be a short time frame. I just don't know much about it.
Carl, what's just on that note, what's the scarier phrase? Is it back surgery or four-footer for the win?
Four-footer for the win. You got to embrace the four-footer for the win. I think back surgery trumps that one. But there's definitely some scary thoughts out there. I just feel like Tiger, and what you were alluding to, Tiger has perspective now. Tiger understands what he's achieved in the game. He's now seen a whole different generation that he inspired come out and start achieving things on a similar level, maybe not to the great heights that he achieved, not with the regularity that he achieved it. He sort of built this. I mean, this crazy level of competition and guys coming out and having success in their early 20s, mid-20s, late into their 30s, and just taking the game by the horns. I think he's got perspective, and if he never gets to play again, I think he can be really proud of what he's done. And again, I'm not saying that he's never going to play again. I think he's going to find a way to get back. It's just, how much Tiger do we have left? That's been the question since he had the chip yips at the Phoenix Open. And what was that, 2015? I mean, we've been asking this question about Tiger since, at various phases, and he's found a way to come back, but it seems like the comebacks are more and more short-lived, so...
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because you think about, I mean, Tiger's mid-40s, what is he, 45, I think? And Phil looks like he's never missed a beat. And I mean, I know his game's not in the shape it is, but, Phil, I mean, it's like Phil's never been injured is what it feels like.
Right.
And again, there is something to be said. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Justin Thomas was commenting on Tiger. And they asked him if he could have Tiger's schedule, and he was like, no, I couldn't do it. The game wouldn't be fun to me. Tiger went 8-8 every day. And he was like, the game wouldn't be fun to me. So there's something to be said for how hard Tiger worked early on to get himself to be the most elite player in the history of the game. That on the backside of that, there's going to come injuries. They're going to come back surgeries. There's going to come some of these issues that he's had. Just because of how hard he was on his body in the early stages. Whereas I think, some of these other guys, even the guys that are on the Champions Tour, that can still go out and just hit a golf ball around and have fun with it and be competitive, probably didn't put themselves through, again, 8-8, 7 days a week, or 6-8, 7 days a week, or whatever the schedule was for Tiger.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we're never, I don't think we're ever going to know the perfect formula for longevity in golf, sustained success plus longevity. I mean, everybody would want. I mean, if you could take that combination, you'd grab it in a heartbeat. I mean, we'd all love to be Tiger Woods or Tom Brady and say, okay, well, I'm just going to follow that formula. Might not work for you. I mean, look at Bryson DeChambeau going on his own, but we don't know if he's going to be off the tour in 5 years. He's pushing his body so hard. He's talking about, pushing his body to the point where he blacks out and has these little mental lapses and things like that. So he's pushing it to the limit. And I think he's learning what that limit is. And, maybe not maybe learning not to push it as much, which so he remains fascinating. Tiger obviously is always going to keep us captivated. And you can speculate. You don't know how much that 8-8 was and how much of it of that intervention where he started putting Navy SEAL regimens in on top of his golf, right, and his physical fitness training. And I haven't seen the documentary. I've been covering golf since 93. I've been here from junior U.S. juniors to college career to hello world. I don't think there's anything I could glean from an HBO documentary that wouldn't seem redundant at this point or salacious. So I haven't watched, I'm not saying I won't watch it, but it wasn't like the Michael Jordan documentary where I felt like I was going to see something new or really just be captivated by an era that meant really something to me in my young life. I don't know what your take is on the Tiger Woods documentary, but I didn't really, fall over myself to go and watch it yet.
I have not seen it yet, so I can't comment on it yet. I've heard there are some pretty amazing lines in it, some pretty amazing moments. But again, if you've lived it, it may not be as surprising, or the shock value of it may not be there as much. But I think on any of those documentaries, you're right. With the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary, we saw a lot of behind the scenes stuff a lot of us had never seen, and I don't know that we'll see a whole lot of that. Maybe we're both mistaken here because we haven't seen it yet, but I don't know that there's going to be a lot that comes out that is, I mean, it's not like we've seen, a lot of times on these documentaries or movies or books or whatever it is, we hear major headlines like, oh, if you saw this, now you know, blah, 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 whatever it is. We haven't really seen that with the documentary. So I think you're probably right. I think it's probably one of those things you just have to, see if you want to see it. Which I do. I love. I mean, anytime I can see something like that, when it's somebody that we've grown up admiring and has as crazy a story and crazy a history as Tiger Woods does, I think all of those things are fun to watch. But I also understand from your perspective. I mean, you lived it and you were in the game of golf. I was not in the game of golf. You were in the game of golf, and you probably heard so many stories and seen so many things. It doesn't even affect you anymore.
Well, I think it would affect me because in the Tiger, his success, I mean, the level, I mean, we should get Justin Ray's numbers, but just the rate that he won. I mean, I think he, still to this day, he's still won like 27% of the tournaments he's entered. So, I mean, every fifth time that's a win. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, that's better than, Barry Bonds, home runs per at bats, at one streak,
It's crazy. That number's insane.
Yeah. I mean, just so what he's done, I mean, I've asked people who cover the game and guys who play the game, I mean, what comparison is there? And obviously they'll point to Nicklaus, and you can look at Snead's number of wins, but just the rate at which he did it and no fall off. Right. I mean, so really there's just two guys we talk about who were dominant. And golf is not a game that engenders dominance. It's so... I mean, this is a guy, I mean, once a generation, he's probably once a century type athlete. I mean, Nicklaus and Jack. So at some point I'll catch that and more so to remain in awe of what this guy did and how much in control of the golf ball he was, how much in control of his body and how much he intimidated the rest of his, of the field,
Right.
From then on. So, it hurts for Tiger. We're getting to know him more. We're getting to see the softer, more human side of Tiger. So he's definitely more of a guy that you pull for. Definitely a guy that you want to see. Okay, we know we're at the back end of the career, the back end of the story. How much is there, and how much more cool stuff can you do, man? I mean, what else are you capable of in your 40s? And you feel deprived of it every time you hear about another back surgery.
Man, the one thing he wants is that Olympic gold medal, because he knows this will probably be his only shot to get one. So
that's tough. That really is.
We'll
tough.
See. I don't know if it'll happen or not, but it would be it'd be pretty special if it happened.
We should probably hop into a break.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Carl's going to talk some Titleist merchandise gear. As he mentioned, this should be the merchandise show week. Even though it's not, we've got a special guest coming up from Titleist to talk about the new Pro V1 and everything else going on with Titleist. That's coming up next. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Welcome back to Playing Through on the Horn. We hope you enjoyed the first section. A little Tiger Woods talk, a little talk about our own games. And you heard the teaser at the end when Bob mentioned we're going to have one of the most popular men in town, quite frankly. When I tell you his job description, you'll know why. He is the regional representative of Titleist Golf. So obviously that's why he's so popular. Big news this week. If you're tuned in to the golf media, you know that there is a new Pro V1 and Pro V1X ball. So we thought what more timely, what more fitting time to bring in Jordan Tavereau from Titleist. Jordan, how are you? Welcome to Playing Through.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so you've got the number one ball in golf. More people play it than any other. More pros play it. It's the number one golf. What makes Titleist go back to the drawing board and really change all four dimensions of the golf ball and its aerodynamics? Why tinker with the Pro V1 when it was already number one?
Well, you know, everything that we do is very much tour driven. You know, and the reason that we like these 2-year launch cycles or cadences is simply just because we want time to be able to sit back, talk to the tour players, figure out where we could be a little bit better. And then take that time to come up with a bunch of different iterations of new product to see what's going to work. So ultimately everything starts on tour, what those guys are looking for, and, you know, in terms of flight, spin, feel characteristics. And, you know, when they tell us they want something maybe a little bit different, you know, that's where R&D comes into play. And that's the process every couple of years, it seemed like. You know, this last year has been a little bit different because typically we would come out with 4, 5, 6 different golf balls to test throughout the spring. Obviously, with COVID, that wasn't an opportunity. So it was, hey, we got one opportunity to make the best ball we can. Let's get after it. So just a little bit different dynamic this year.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned that 2-year cycle that Titleist does. You know, the last 5 or 10 years, you know, when things got hot and heavy and golf was going strong, there were companies out on the market, not Titleist, who were putting out 2 drivers a year, you know, and the push to get equipment out quickly and bombard the market with so much product created some consumer confusion. Titleist has always stuck to its gun on that 2-year cycle, and it's nice to hear you mention that it had to do with player feedback. It had to do with watching the trends in the game. And when we're going to get to talking about the drivers here in a little bit, the quest right now is for speed, but to do it practically within everybody's different motion to the ball. I mean, speed means different things to different people. Certainly, you know, you know Cameron Smith and you know all the guys, you know, your Webb Simpsons and all the guys playing Titleist come at the ball differently. And we down at the club and municipal level, we certainly come at it differently. So it's interesting all the factors you guys have to take in to stay at the cutting edge of the game. But tell me, what's different when the next time we pick up the new Pro V1 golf balls? What are we going to notice that's different about these newly designed Pro V1s and Pro V1Xs?
So this will probably be the biggest change, I would say, in the 20-year history of Pro V1, outside of launching it 20 years ago. Typically, what you'll see happen is 1 or 2 components of the golf ball change. This will be the first time that we'll change all 4 components. So core, casing layer, cover, and dimple pattern are all changing on this golf ball. Sometimes when you change one thing, you know, in order to enhance performance in another capacity, you got to change the cover to make sure that, you know, all 4 of those components are interacting the right way and in turn giving us the performance that we're looking for. Sometimes you change the core and you may lose something around the greens if you don't change the cover. So, you know, the changes that we made were all to make sure that we could, you know, ultimately launch it a little bit higher, you know, keep our long game spin, you know, spin off your driver and your 3-wood consistent, but give you more spin around the greens. And a lot of the tour players, you know, ultimately were asking for a little bit softer feel, which comes through on the cover. But also, you know, part of that launching a little bit higher was to get steeper angles of descent, making it a little bit easier to stop the ball coming in, you know, as you get into those longer irons and mid irons. So pretty, a big change for us, without question.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. Are you a Pro V1 guy or Pro V1X?
You know, I switched to Pro V1 about 4 years ago. So I was always a Pro V1X player from when I first started playing it in 2000 to 2016, and then made the switch over to Pro V1 not too long ago.
What was your rationale?
Well, there was some confusion I would probably tell you 4 years ago. But spin's never really been a big issue of mine, but I've always been a high trajectory player. And when we changed the way we cooked the cores to Pro V1 4 years ago, what happened was there was effectively a switch. And not because Pro V1X changed, but when we changed the way we cooked the core to the Pro V1, it reduced the spin on that golf ball to where it now spun less than Pro V1X. And so I liked the lower flight, softer feel, and then a little bit less spin for Pro V1. So that, it kind of matched well for me because I was already a high ball hitter and spin was never an issue. So I could bring the ball down, keep my spin pretty consistent, and get more of that, with the flight window that I want to see.
That's nice. It's great that you can dial it in, but just by tweaking equipment. I notice that's one thing that happens quite frequently in custom fitting is you'll pull out different shafts, you'll go a different lengths, loft and lie angle, things of that nature, and even different club heads. But the best fitters also tweak the ball that you're hitting when you're being fit. So all those characters, so the way you flight it, all that stuff matters. I think that's really interesting. Do you feel the same way? Do you go into that nth degree when you're doing custom fitting out there in the field?
No doubt. There's times where you're gonna find that switching somebody's ball can really give them those small changes to, whether it's flight or feel or spin to kind of hit the window they're looking for. Not every time, a lot of time guys are kind of in the right product, but there's a lot of instances where, just a little change to golf ball can make, a pretty drastic change to somebody's performance.
Yeah, there's no question. You never know quite what the perfect tweak is. I'm going to transition into something else because we talked about the average player and getting feedback. And I want to get into another component to the Titleist line, and that's the top of the line. The driver, the TSI drivers, at least from the peanut gallery, seem like to me, Jordan, game changers. And for the longest time, you would talk about better players gravitating to Titleist, the guys, single digit handicap and better down to the low and plus guys, really, really Titleist guys. You didn't see a lot of Titleist in the 15 to 20 handicappers bags. It seems like there's been a transition where people are looking at TSI as both the player's driver and something that's actually got some forgiveness where, you kind of made that jump where it really crosses all boundaries. Is that a good perception, or does that hold true?
I think it's a pretty fair assessment. Yeah. I would tell you that our drivers were great for high speed players, and I think there's a really big misconception with consumers out there because they look at Adam Scott and Dustin Johnson, these guys who have immense amounts of club head speed, and they see their spin numbers at 1900 and they think that's good for them. Not necessarily the case, if we're trying to control our driver, but that's kind of the way the market has gone. And so we needed to be in that space. I would say we've always made a fairly forgiving driver. But now I think the speed is there and the spin numbers are lower that it's really attracting a lot of people. We've had the number one driver on tour for the last couple of years. We don't necessarily talk about it very often because it's not something we're looking for, but there's a lot of non-Titleist players on tour that play the driver because they're getting great performance out of it. And now we're seeing that trickle down effect to consumers too, that are kind of noticing that and seeing product out there. And so now they're interested in it. And, TS was great, and TSI since it launched in November has been unbelievable. It's been fantastic.
So when we say TSI, we say Titleist Speed Impact. How does the impact come into play? It's interesting. Titleist chose to brand it with that term in there. What's the deciding factor that affects that all important moment of impact with this driver line?
I think if we're talking about maybe the most important feature of the driver, it's what we call ATI, which is the face material that we're using. Mm-hmm. It stands for Allegheny Technologies Incorporated. The backstory on that is that they're a metal sourcing company out of Pittsburgh. And we partnered with them for a number of years, and they work primarily in aerospace and defense and medical device, and they'll send us materials that they think could be useful for golf clubs. And this one made a lot of sense for us. It's got an unbelievable strength, but it's got a lot of flex too. So you get durability, even though you're going to make it unbelievably thin, which allows you to get more ball speed. So you get the durability and you get the ball speed that you're looking for. What a lot of people don't realize is when we had our concept driver about, I want to say 7 years ago, that was actually, ATI was the crown of that driver. So, the concept clubs that we put out every couple of years are designed to be things that we're testing to put in line later on down the road. And this is one of those instances where, it happened to be something we used a while back and put into play just recently.
It always amazes me that the guys that build golf clubs can find new ways to manufacture speed, and you think it's all marketing and a lot of people kind of roll their eyes. But now that we've got, Foresight and TrackMan and ways to quantify this stuff, the aerodynamic gains really exist. I mean, so what else in that driver head are they doing to kind of build speed? Now we're talking about stable speed. We're talking about, where no matter who you are, it's still controllable and you can still keep the ball in the fairway. But we're really seeing an era in club heads, and especially with this TSI line from Titleist, that speed gains are a real thing. How is that? How are they doing that?
Well, and so the part of that face is the weight savings you get from it.
Right.
And being able to disperse that weight in other places. What I love about the driver itself is that the goal was, we want to give you more speed, but we, like you said, we want it to be stability too. And where I think a lot of companies do well with, stability and MOI, heel to toe. We do really well there too, but one of the things we really focused on with this driver is that stability top to bottom. And the consistency that you see in ball speeds and spin numbers when you're missing it high and low on the face are really impressive. And I think that's why, the tour guys like it, because they're not losing a whole lot when they're missing, and those guys don't miss very often either. That really impressed me about the driver. And, R&D spent a lot more time with the aerodynamics of this driver than maybe past models. So it's faster in the air. You can swing it a little bit faster because it doesn't have nearly the drag that it had, in TS or 917.
You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn. We've got Jordan Tabereau, the local Titleist rep here with us. Jordan, it's been great talking to you. Talk to me a little bit about how people can get a hold of you. I mean, you go from club to club, and how much coverage area here in Central Texas do you cover?
So I am just Austin, San Antonio, and then I do travel down to Laredo. But I'm really focused just in Austin, San Antonio. I'm based, pretty much West Austin and Dripping Springs, but split my time between Austin and San Antonio. And then, we do some days that you'll find on the website, but they're called Titleist Thursdays. We'll start back up in the spring, and it's just kind of a home base for us to do our fittings. Not everybody has access to a private club, so we want to give people the ability to have a great fitting, a great opportunity to test the product and get fit for it. And so we do that in San Antonio down at TPC, and then up in Austin we actually do it up at UT Golf Club. And it's just, you sign, you go to titleist.com and look for a Titleist Thursday spot. You can sign up online. So I spend a lot of time there, connecting with people, and I'll fit from time to time when my fitters aren't available, but that's going to become our home base, home away from home.
Very cool. Good friends of the show there. Bob Ballew, my co-host, could not be here on this segment, but next time we talk to you, we're going to have to get in depth on wedge fitting, because I think that's Bob's last frontier. He's got his game down to about a five. Says he's a really, I've played with Bob one time and I saw him use putter from around the green six or seven times. So I think his next frontier is going to be getting with you out there and getting that Vokey wedge dialed in and get past that fear of hitting shots around the green. So So we're wrapping up on a break here, but next time we talk to you, we'd love to get into wedge fitting and talk more about you. But Jordan, it was great talking to you. Great education on the new Titleist Pro V1 and the TSI driver line. Can't thank you enough for being on Playing Through.
Carl, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Be happy to come on anytime.
Yep. That's Jordan Tabarrow from Titleist. When we come back, we're going to talk about one thing Bob's done on the golf course lately that he's never done before and talk about a couple of local tournaments that we'd like you to consider getting involved in. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, it's time for our final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. Great stuff there, Carl, with Jordan. As you guys talked a little Titleist golf and the new Pro V1 balls that are out, coming out, and what those are going to look like, what those can do for your game. So always good to get a little insight into the merchandise, especially on the week that, like you said, is the supposed to be the merchandise show, the big PGA merchandise show. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
Before we go, I just wanted to give you one thing I've done I've never done before in the game of golf. I told you I played 2 weeks ago. I walked 27, 18, 18. Last week I walked 18, 18, 9, and then rode the last 9. Carl, it really does help. It really does get your body in better shape. It really makes you feel like you're accomplishing something. And if you're not a huge fan of just getting on a treadmill or running the neighborhood or whatever a lot of people do, it's a great way to get some exercise if you can get out and do it. So and it gives you those moments of just kind of walking around and taking a minute to just kind of enjoy walking the golf course and being in the woods and all those things that go along with it. So I would highly encourage it if you're thinking about it.
There's no downside. I mean, yeah, it's, the health benefits are great. The mental health benefits are good because you're out in nature. I really don't see any downside to walking. It's great. It feels like you play better. You play faster. You're more in tune with your game. Walking used to be the norm. I know we've got time constraints and carts have become the new norm, but when you have the opportunity, I think definitely walk above all.
No doubt. Well, we want to close. Yep. Tell about any events you have coming up, because we've got some, always have some great golf events going around in the city of Austin. And Carl, I'll let you start with an event coming up in March that sounds like a lot of fun. Especially knowing the type of great pros that we have in the Austin area.
Well, you know, one of our great friends, Chris DeCaratry, the head golf professional at probably director of golf, you know, and I always transpose those, at Cimarron Hills out there in Georgetown, you know, great guy, great membership out there. They put something on every year called the Cimarron Hills Pro-Am, and it rings true because listen to some of these names that if you sign up as an AM, like you or I signed up, you have the opportunity to potentially play with Omar Uresti, Chart Vanderwalt, Troy Madison, Zoran Zorchik, and they're growing that list as they go. So this has become a big annual event, usually capped off by a huge crawfish boil. That's not happening this year, but they are raising funds, and they've got a special purpose this year. The what was formerly known as the Southern Texas PGA Foundation is now called PGA Reach Southern Texas. And the scholarship fund that's going to be awarded this year goes in the name of the dearly departed and great former PGA Tour winner J.L. Lewis, a guy who just sort of became a mini legend around the Austin area, giving a lot of lessons and just doing a lot of great things for the golf community. A guy that certainly reached great heights in his game, but also knew how to give back and really had a heart to give back. I know he coached high school golf in the latter years of his life and really got it. You know, he really understood golf and what it meant to his life and his family and was just so great about giving back. So that Cimarron Hills Pro-Am is happening March 26th. That's a Friday out at Cimarron Hills. So opportunity to go play in that. So just hit that Cimarron Hills website. You can also call 512-763-8737. Talk to Chris and the team there about the Cimarron Hills Pro-Am. You know, it's kind of tournament season right now, Bob. It's a time where, you know, people want to get back in the game. You know, maybe we're doing some social distancing. We're not staying around for a couple beers afterwards or barbecue or some of the things that we've gotten used to. But it's still great. The cause still exists, and the reasons to get together are still really important. So good to see a great cause being put in the name of J.L. Lewis.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, JL's done so much for the game of golf in the city of Austin. It's wonderful that that we're putting his name on something that's that special and will help some other people in the process. JL was a part of our tournament, the Under Blue Skies event 2 years ago before his passing, and was a Beat the Pro guy out on the 17th hole there. And just a really special man, and it's awesome they're doing that. And just because I said that, just real quick before we go, the 7th annual Under Blue Skies Golf Classic and Party is taking place May 14th this year out at Avery Ranch. All levels of sponsorship are still available, from $1,000 all the way up to $25,000. We'd love to get in touch with you if you want to be involved. CBS Austin is obviously our media sponsor, and they do an unbelievable job of promoting everything that goes on with our tournament. So again, it's May 14th. Just BlueGolf.com if you want to look at it, or just get in contact with me. I'm on Twitter. You can find me anywhere. But I would love to have the conversation with you about what's going on with our tournament this year. It's going to be out at Avery Ranch again this year for the third straight year. We are working on what we're going to do for the party that night. We will definitely have a virtual party, but we're hoping that maybe by then we could have something in person, even if it's just for a small group. Obviously, we won't know that for a while, but all in all, we're just excited to have a seventh year of this tournament that we do to benefit the ALS Association of Texas. And we'll certainly talk more about that in the coming months right here on Playing Through on Horn FM. Carl, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking that time with Jordan. That was some really good information about what's going on with Titleist.
Most importantly, Jordan Tabarrow wanted me to know that your Pro V1s are in the mail. So they've changed everything about the Pro V1 ball, and you'll soon be putting it in flight in your game here before too long.
I love it. I'll be looking out for those. That's fantastic. Because that is the ball I play. Although I will play other balls, because let's be honest, I'm not very good, and I can't really worry about a ball as much as I need to worry about my aim and my direction and my putting and everything else. So we got work to do, Carl. We got work to do.
Always. But now we got more time to do it, so I'm excited.
That's right. Guys, as always, we really appreciate you being a part of our show, spending an hour with us on your Saturday morning, hopefully on your way to the golf course to play some great golf and have fun doing it. That's what we encourage every time we do this show, is when you get the chance to get out there, it's 4 hours. Don't be frustrated. Just put a smile on your face and go enjoy playing golf. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn. We'll see you next week. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.